Well, shalom, y'all. We're getting closer and closer to the feast. It's exciting. And I'm sure none of you are feeling at all stressed at all. In fact, I'm sure that probably none of you have ever felt stressed or you've never felt distressed. Right? I mean, here, what's there to be distressed about, right? Here we are in the nation of Texas, the great nation of Texas, right? Everything's good. We don't have any problems at all. We're not distressed about anything. There's no reason to be stressed. Now, of course, this is all in jest, isn't it? There's always something to get stressed about. There's always something to be distressed about. It's Satan's world. What can we say? It's Satan's world, and there's always going to be something out there that'll needle at us. And it'll needle and needle and needle and needle until something happens. Either we break down or we overcome. And we're just so blessed to have the big picture. We're so blessed to have the big picture. And where is the big picture? Well, it's in here. This is where the big picture lives. And it needs to live also in our hearts, it needs to burn in our hearts. And then it can take us through distressful times, times when we are stressed. Because this book contains the best action-adventure story ever told. Have you ever thought of it that way? We all love action-adventure, don't we? I mean, if you think about, okay, what do I want to go and see at the movies? Action-adventure would be right up on top for a lot of people. And why is that? You know, it's almost like an action-adventure, there's a set structure. Every action-adventure has that same structure. You know in the end what's going to happen. The good guys are going to win. But we still want to go every time, don't we? We still want to go. Even if we've seen the action-adventure many times before, we'll go again. And we'll get excited again. You know, when the villain is about to, you know, sweep in and steal the damsel in distress, you know, we'll be wanting to jump up out of our seats and shout to her, "Watch out, he's coming to get you." You know, it's something that's exciting every time. Every time we watch it, it's exciting. Think about Indiana Jones. I don't know how many of you are fans of that. I'm a big fan of Indiana Jones. I love it. And I could watch it over and over and over again and get excited every time. Star Wars. A lot of people are really into Star Wars. Same sort of thing. You know, you could watch it over and over and get excited about it. But how about the greatest action adventure ever? How excited can we get about that? How excited? Because if you think about it, the Bible is full of action adventure. In fact, you could probably break it up into a number of different epics during which there are many episodes that take place. And in each of those, as is true with every action adventure, there's a hero, there's a heroine, there's an arch enemy. And there's the rest of the world, the rest of humanity, the rest of nature. And usually when the enemy, the arch enemy, has the upper hand, not only is the heroine in danger, and the hero is also in danger because he's got to go and fight the arch enemy, but the rest of nature and the rest of humanity is also in danger and suffering in some way or another. But usually what happens in an action-adventure is the hero and the arch-enemy fight each other. They're dueling scenes. There are possibly numerous of those scenes where they are facing off against each other and fighting. And that's hair-raising and exciting. With every blow that falls, we're waiting to see what's going to happen. Is the hero going to triumph in this fight? Or will it be for a later fight? Will the archenemy get away this time? Will they be roaming free to continue to cause havoc and destruction. But ultimately we know there's going to be a showdown between those two individuals, the hero and the arch enemy. There's going to be a showdown. And we know that the hero is going to win. But that doesn't stop us from watching. We're so excited. We're sitting on the edge of our seat watching every new piece as the story unfolds. Even if we've seen it before. The hero wins. The damsel in distress is saved. No more distress for the damsel in distress. I guess she becomes just the damsel then, not the damsel in distress anymore. The world is saved from utter destruction. Nature is restored. The flowers start growing again. The birds start tweeting in the trees. The water starts flowing in the rivers. And then there's a victory parade right at the end to culminate the whole thing. There's a victory parade. The victory parade has the hero, the heroine at his side, all beautifully dressed, walking towards a castle or a throne or some kind of stately place. They're walking together, and with them are all their team, the team that has been helping them, their entourage, the people that have been fighting on the side of the hero against the archenemy. They're all there, all dressed neatly, having had their first bath. You know, and you hardly recognize them because before they've all been in battle clothes and full of mud and so on. And now they're all togged out in their best, and they're walking together with the hero and the heroine. And the trumpets are playing, and it's a wonderful thing. And that's the victory parade right at the end of an adventure story. You can't help but get excited at something like that. You can't help but do that. So let's think about the Bible. Let's think about the stories in the Bible. And for the purposes of this sermon, and there are probably many different ways to think about this, many different kind of frameworks that we could put around the Bible. I'm sure you've heard many, but just for the purposes of today, let's put four sections around the Bible and divide it into four major epics. Four major epics. The first one would be around ancient Israel. Ancient Israel, the physical nation. The second one would be the New Testament church, on the way, all the way through to today, where God works with select individuals from all nations. It's no longer the physical nation of Israel only, as in the first epic. So second epic, it's expanded to include all nations. And of course, the Holy Spirit is available in a completely different way than it was in the first epic. The third epic would be the time during the millennium. The time during the millennium that's coming. So that would be our third action-adventure epic. Now remember, all of these epics are going to follow essentially the same structure. There's going to be a hero, a heroine, people that are helping the hero to overcome the archenemy. The archenemy obviously playing a key role. And there's going to ultimately be a major confrontation between good and evil, the forces of good and evil. The arch enemy is going to be conquered, and there's going to be freedom for the damsel in distress and the freedom for the whole of humanity. So I said there are four sections. So we've said ancient Israel, the New Testament church, humanity during the millennium, and the fourth one is humanity during the period depicted by the eighth day. So those are our four sections, our four epics that we're going to talk about. So let's review these. Let's review these, and let's together, get excited about the stories in this book. Let's get excited about them, because that's what gives us the hope. Brethren, as we started off here talking about distress and stress and saying, yeah, none of us have got that, right? Obviously we do. Now, what's one of the best ways to lift us out of stress and distress? Hope. Hope is one of the best ways. And revising these action-adventure stories out of the Bible, revising them, reviewing them, taking them into our hearts, gives us that hope. It gives us that hope. And that hope will carry us forward as we move on into the future. Because this isn't the end of distress for us, is it? We know more's coming. We know more stress is coming. Let's burn these into our hearts and take hope. So, the first one. The first epic, and in season one of this epic, in episode one, we see Israel. Israel in the land of Egypt. They were initially blessed there because of what Joseph had done, what God had done through Joseph. The whole nation of Egypt and all the nations round about, for that matter, were blessed because of everything that God achieved through Joseph. But let's introduce the heroine. The heroine during this time, who is definitely someone that becomes a damsel in distress. And let's see how this happens. In Exodus 1, if you turn there, in Exodus 1, and we're not going to read every single verse here, we're going to grab a couple of them just to get the gist of it. And again, I know you know the story, but like any good action adventure, it's worth repeating. And it's still exciting when we think of it. So Exodus 1 and verse 8, it says, "Now there arose a new king over Egypt." So we see now the rise of a character who's going to become the arch enemy. The arch enemy. Of course, he's being inspired within the spirit realm by Satan, who wants a vendetta against the nation of Israel. Now, this new king did not know Joseph. And he said to his people, "Behold, the people of Israel are too many and too mighty for us. This damsel out here has been blessed by God." Of course, he didn't see the great eternal God. He just saw the damsel, and she was so blessed. "They're too many and too mighty for us. Come, let's deal shrewdly with them, lest they multiply. And if war breaks out, they join our enemies and fight against us and escape from the land." Therefore, they set taskmasters over them to afflict them with heavy burdens. And they built for Pharaoh store cities, Pithom and Ramesses. But the more they were oppressed, the more they multiplied, and the more they spread abroad. And the Egyptians were in dread of the people of Israel, so they ruthlessly made the people of Israel work as slaves. Now, so this is not a happy damsel anymore. This is now a damsel in distress. She's been taken into slavery. She's been taken into slavery, and she's been made to work harder and harder. Verse 14, "They made their lives bitter with hard service in mortar and brick, in all kinds of work in the field. In all their work, they ruthlessly made them work as slaves." And of course, it gets worse. Their trial gets worse. The king of Egypt says to the Hebrew midwives, one of whom was named Shiphrah and the other Puah, "When you serve as midwife to the Hebrew children and see them on the birth stool, if it's a son, you shall kill him." Because they were still concerned that the damsel in distress even though she was in distress, was continuing to multiply. If it's a daughter, she shall live. So that was verse 16. Verse 17, but the midwives feared God. So now you start seeing emerging the team, or part of the team, that is going to support the damsel, support the cause for good. Verse 18, the king of Egypt called the midwives and said to them, why have you done this? Because they didn't obey what the king had said. And of course the midwives said, because the Hebrew women are not like the Egyptian women. They're vigorous. They give birth before the midwife comes to them. So that was their story anyway. But they were certainly helping as much as they could against Pharaoh. So in this part of the story, this first epic, of the nation of Israel is the damsel, and they are in distress. Now, introducing the hero. The hero gets introduced, Exodus 3 and verse 6. And of course, it's Moses. And God calls to Moses from the burning bush. Exodus 3 verse 6, and he says, I'm the God of your father, the God of Abram, Isaac, Jacob. Moses hid his face, for he was afraid to look at God. And the Lord said, I have surely seen the affliction of my people. And verse 8, and I've come down to deliver them out of the hand of the Egyptians and to bring them up out of that land to a good and broad land. So now we start seeing some of the reward that would come. The reward that God had in mind for the damsel. And he was going to use Moses, and Moses was going to be the hero of the story. And we know what happens after that. Moses has to go to Pharaoh, and he goes with Aaron, and God promises to be with him. In verse 17 of chapter 3, it says, and I promise that I'll bring you up out of the affliction of Egypt to the land of the Canaanites, Hittites, Amorites, Perizzites, Hivites, Jebusites, and all the other ites. And a land that's flowing with milk and honey. And they will listen to your voice. You and the elders of Israel shall go to the king of Egypt and say to him, the Lord, the God of the Hebrews, has met with us. And now, please, let us go 3 days' journey to the wilderness that we may sacrifice. Again, forward fasting with this story, brethren, we know what happens. We know that ultimately the arch enemy hardens his heart. The arch enemy is Pharaoh. And of course, he is backed up by all the power of Satan. Satan is the one that's inspiring Pharaoh to do these things. And so the arch enemy, Pharaoh, and Satan behind him, is continuing to force their way, to have their way with the damsel in distress. Exodus 5 and verse 13, we see how the arch enemy, through his minions, the taskmasters, redoubles his efforts to try and destroy the people, to try and make life a misery for the damsel in distress. It says, verse 13, the taskmasters were urgent, saying, complete your work, your daily task each day, as if there was straw. So they took the straw away from them and they said, continue to make the bricks. Stop sniveling. Do your work. And of course they had whips and they were beating the people. Now, what was happening to the rest of humanity and nature as this started coming to a culmination? Well, of course we all remember the plagues, don't we? And just like in all action-adventure movies, it's not limited. The hardships are not limited to the damsel in distress. The hardships spread to the whole environment around. The trees start dying. The rivers start drying up. The birds stop singing. The rest of humanity is groaning and travailing. And that's exactly what happens with the plagues. The water turns to blood. There's no water. People are dying of thirst. The frogs come out. The gnats or lice come out. The flies come out. The livestock are diseased. They start dying off. There are boils on everyone's body. There's thunder and hail the size of watermelons or more, I suppose. Massive hail comes down, locusts, and then total darkness. Talk about everything being in a state of distress. Not just the damsel now. It's the whole of humanity that's in that region is in distress. And then the last straw, literally, the death of the firstborn. Such suffering because of the evil that is in power. But of course we know that ultimately that final blow of the death of the firstborn leads to the release of the slaves. The freedom that is given to the damsel in distress ensues immediately on the heels of that. Exodus 12 and verse 31. Then he summoned Moses and Aaron by night and says, "Up! Go out from among my people, both you and the people of Israel. Go and serve the Lord as you've said. Take your flocks and your herds as you've said and be gone and bless me also." And the Egyptians were urgent with the people to send them out of the land. For they said, "We'll all be dead if you don't go. Go." So the people of Israel, in verse 35, also did what Moses told them. And they asked the Egyptians for silver and gold and for clothing. Well, some of the translations put it that way. Others say that they spoiled them. Others say that the Egyptians just gave them stuff. And probably there was a lot of all of that going on. The Lord had given people favor in the sight of the Egyptians, so they let them have whatever they asked. Thus they plundered the Egyptians. That's the wording in this translation for verse 36. Now you see, this is the victory march, isn't it? This is the victory march within the structure of an action adventure. This is that time when everyone comes together and they're all rejoicing. Verse 37, the people of Israel journeyed from Ramesses to Succoth, about 600,000 men on foot, besides women and children. A mixed multitude went up. Livestock, flocks, herds. And other verses say they went up with a high hand. They were rejoicing. Of course, later on in Deuteronomy, we see other situations where, you know, the damsel backslides. And it's almost as if, you know, just like when you're watching a movie and the damsel is going to be in danger of falling back into some evil situation, you feel like you want to get up and shout in the middle of the movie, "Watch out, he's after you, don't do that, don't go there." It's similar here. You think about, man, God has given you so much. He's rescued you. He's taken you out of Egypt. Don't backslide now. But they backslide. But God doesn't give up. He doesn't give up. And neither does the hero, Moses, although he gets pretty close to it. He gets pretty close to it. Ultimately, good prevails, and the Israelites go forward into the promised land. So that's the first episode. That's the first episode, or the first epic, rather, of the four. The archenemy is defeated. You know, Pharaoh and all of his armies are destroyed in the sea, and the damsel in distress is free. So, now we go to the second episode of spiritual Israel, essentially. You know, starts with, you know, the birth of Jesus. And then we see how things develop from that. And who's the hero in this one? The hero is Jesus now. Whereas in the first one, it was Moses. The hero here is Jesus. And he starts putting together his team, the team that's going to work with him. And of course, Satan is after them from day one. Satan's after the person that has prepared the way for Jesus. He takes John the Baptist into captivity. And then ultimately has him beheaded. So in Matthew 3, verse 13, let's pick up the story about the hero. Then Jesus came from Galilee to the Jordan to John to be baptized by him. And John would have prevented him, saying, "I need to be baptized by you. Do you come to me?" And Jesus answered, "Let it be so now, for thus it's fitting for us to fulfill all righteousness." And so John consents. And Jesus is baptized and immediately went up from the water, and the heavens were opened, and they saw the Spirit of God descending on him like a dove and coming to rest on him. So the voice comes out of heaven, "This is my beloved Son in whom I'm well pleased." So that's the entry and the designation of the hero for this next season or this next epic of the story. Now, of course, there is the archenemy of Satan is still very active in this second leg of the overall story that unfolds in this great epic. But Jesus is going to overcome Satan. There is an epic battle, there's an epic struggle that takes place, which I'm sure we're all very familiar with. But let's read it again. Matthew 4. Jesus has been fasting, and he's been in the wilderness, and he knows that time is coming when he's going to have to face the archenemy face to face, and it's going to be a battle of epic proportions. And when I read this, brethren, I picture in my mind a sword at Jesus' side. Because when he strikes back with, "It is written." And what is written? What is this called? In many ways, this is called the sword. He strikes back with the sword. So I picture them literally as two swordsmen standing there, having this battle. Matthew 4, verse 1. Jesus is led up by the Spirit into the wilderness to be tempted by the devil. And after fasting 40 days and 40 nights, he was hungry. That's the biggest understatement in the Bible. But the tempter comes, Satan comes, and he says to him, "If you're the Son of God, command these stones to become loaves of bread." What does Jesus do? He pulls his sword out and he strikes back. He strikes back. He says, "It is written, man shall not live by bread alone, but every word that comes from the mouth of God." The devil has to retreat after that. But he comes back. He comes back. Verse 5, the devil took him to the holy city and set him on a pinnacle in the temple and says to him, if you are the Son of God, throw yourself down. For it is written, he will command his angels concerning you, and on their hands they'll bear you up, lest you strike your foot against a stone. Jesus says to him, again, it is written. He pulls out the sword again. It is written, you shall not put the Lord your God to the test. Third time, the devil took him to a high mountain, shows him all the kingdoms of the world and their glory, and says, all of these I will give you if you'll fall down and worship me. And Jesus says, begone, Satan, for it is written. Again, he's got the sword right there. For it is written, you shall worship the Lord your God, and him only shall you serve. Three decisive blows from the sword executed by our Savior, by the hero, by Jesus Christ. And the Satan has to put his tail between his legs and turn and run. The devil left him in verse 11. And behold, the angels came and were ministering to him. So the hero is there, but now he's starting to build his team. He sees Matthew, he sees John, James, he sees Peter, he sees Andrew. He sees them where they are, and he says, follow me. And he starts training them and teaching them. He starts showing them how to use the sword. He teaches them how to use the sword. He teaches them what he wants them to do. Verse 17, Matthew 4, from that time Jesus began to preach, saying, repent, for the kingdom of heaven is at hand. And while walking in the Sea of Galilee, he saw two brothers, Simon, who's called Peter, and Andrew, his brother, casting a net into the sea, for they were fishermen. And he said to them, follow me, and I'll make you fishers of men. And so it goes. He adds more and more and more. But the archenemy, Satan, unleashes all his weapons against Jesus' ministry. Ultimately, it leads all the way up to Jesus' crucifixion. And we gasp and we think, oh, our hero's dead. But then he rises again. He rises again 3 days later. And the church grows suddenly. There's sudden growth. The excitement that goes with that. Is there danger? Yes. Is the archenemy still there? Yes. But there's enormous enthusiasm amongst the people. Amongst the people that are supporting Jesus. And at the end of this particular period, in a time yet to come in our day, many of us hopefully will see this. But even if we don't, we'll certainly see it when we are resurrected. But when Jesus comes, that will be the victory march. You think about it. For this particular leg of the journey, of the overall story flow, the victory march for us will be the resurrection, the first resurrection. When Jesus returns to this earth, the Mount of Olives is split in two, the resurrection of the righteous occurs, and the destruction of the evil forces takes place. And Satan, the archenemy, is put in a place of restraint, together with all others in his realm. That's an amazing victory parade that we can look forward to. So those are the first two. We're halfway. Stay with me. We're going into the third now. The third. And that is the millennium. The time of the millennium. Pictured, obviously, by the Feast of Tabernacles that we're all getting excited about going to. It's just on the horizon for us now. So this episode opens with the establishment of the kingdom of God on earth, a time that lasts for 1,000 years. Our hero, again, is Jesus Christ. So the first episode, or the first major epic, the hero was Moses. And ancient Israel was the damsel. The second was Jesus Christ. And the church, the true church of God, is the damsel in distress. And now we are moving into the kingdom, the millennium, and the hero again is Jesus. Now he is the King of Kings, and we are on his team as essentially a group of superheroes. He is the superhero, but we are there, right there with him as spirit beings, helping him in a very powerful way. Now, during this time, the damsel actually is at peace. The damsel is the rest of humanity. They're at peace, largely, because Satan's removed from the picture. The archenemy is nowhere to be seen. He's out of the picture. And we have the opportunity to help those people, because they will have come through terrible times, times that no humans have ever seen before. Horrendous times, and they will need help. So that preparation time that takes place is also preparing for the final, the fourth and final time, preparing a much bigger team and a much bigger facility to be able to handle the billions of people that are going to be involved in the fourth piece of the story. So we need peace during that time. We need peace to get things done, to get prepared, to get ready, to get this big team ready. But Satan, the archenemy, has to have his role even in this third. And so he gets released right at the end of the 1,000 years, doesn't he? He gets released. And again, he comes for the damsel. Again, he attacks, and he tries to take away as many people as possible. Let's go to Revelation and read a little bit more about this. So, Revelation, okay, something went wrong with my notes. Bear, give me a second, I'll get there. It seems like some of them have gone missing. Literally, the last couple of pages disappeared on the way here. Okay, it's Revelation. Let's go to Revelation towards the end of the book. I'll confirm which chapter. Yeah, chapter 20, Revelation 20. Let's read here. Then I saw an angel coming down from heaven, holding in his hand the key of the bottomless pit and a great chain. He seized the dragon and the ancient serpent, who is the devil and Satan, and bound him for 1,000 years and threw him into the pit and shut it and sealed it over him, that he should deceive the nations no more till the 1,000 years were ended. So this is the beginning of that third segment of the overall story. So the archenemy is put away, and he's out of the picture. Then I saw thrones, and seated on them were those whom judgment was committed, and I saw the souls of those who had been beheaded for the testimony, for Jesus, and for the word of God, who had not worshipped the beast or its image and had not received its mark on their foreheads. And they came to life and they reigned with Christ 1,000 years. So that's describing the millennium, that time when we will be there. And what will happen during the millennium? Just like in some of the previous episodes, the world would have gone through a terrible time. Nature would have been destroyed. You know, we know in other places in Revelations, it talks about the seals and talks about things that are going to happen to the earth and how it'll be destroyed. Well, during the millennium, the opposite's going to take place. The deserts are going to blossom like the rose. Streams are going to start flowing. It's going to be a beautiful time. But as we said, Satan is going to have his hand right at the end of this segment. And that will then lead us ultimately into the fourth epic, of these four that we're describing. And the fourth epic is the one that looks at humanity during the period referred to as the Great White Throne Judgment, or that's pictured by the eighth day, the feast called the eighth day. The throne during this time indicates the majestic authority that God has, and the one sitting on the throne is the Lord Jesus Christ. Now, the damsel here is, again, the rest of humanity. It's all of humanity. They're all given the chance this time to be saved and to be freed, from the terrible clutches of Satan. And when is the victory parade in this fourth one? Well, it's kind of split in two, because the resurrection, the second resurrection, is a victory parade in many ways, isn't it? Because I don't know about you, but I'm sure you also, just like me, have got people that you're waiting to see in that second resurrection. And that will be enormously encouraging. When I see my dad come up, my dad was never in the church. He was a good man. And I'm so looking forward to seeing him. And I'm sure you are too. You have lots of relatives that you just can't wait to see. It's going to be amazing, an amazing time. But the other part of this time that is going to be so incredible when it comes to a victory parade is going to be right at the end, when God the Father comes out of heaven and the New Jerusalem comes down. I can't think of anything more amazing in terms of the victory march to end all victory marches. I mean, that just is the superlative one. It pales everything else into insignificance. And there have been some spectacular victory marches leading up to that. But brethren, we have been given the opportunity to have a role in these stories. These are not just fiction stories. We've been given a role. In fact, we've been called. Think of it this way. Think of this analogy. You're an actor. You're sitting at home. Your agent is out there trying to get parts for you in movies. The phone rings and you're being called and given the opportunity to have a role in a movie. I'm not trying to trivialize it, but just you know, we're talking here about action-adventure stories. You have an opportunity to be in an action-adventure story. You have an active role in that story that's being offered to you. You've been called, literally called. It's being handed to you. The script is here. The script is here. We have to pick it up. Read it, learn it, make it part of us. We're not only given the opportunity to, remember, there were four pieces to this. One of them has already happened. It's gone. So we can't be in that one because that's history. But we're given the opportunity to be in the second one because it's now. It's happening right now. The New Testament church all the way through to the return of Jesus Christ. That is the second one. We have a role in that now. But we have an even bigger opportunity to be in the next one as part of the team at Jerusalem, supporting Jesus Christ, supporting the hero. And we have an even bigger one opportunity to continue to have a role during the Great White Throne Judgment. And beyond that, Because like any really good action-adventure series, don't you get the feeling that that's not the end of the story? You know? The last book of Revelation? Yeah, it's great, but that's not the end of the story. There's so many more amazing adventures to come beyond that. Right now, we're the damsel. Right now, we're the damsel. We're in distress. The world around us is in distress. The world around us is dying. We're given the opportunity to be a part of the team that is supporting the hero in this end time. We're given the opportunity to have a role that's going to perpetuate into the next two epics beyond and for eternity beyond that. This is the key, the script. We've got to learn the script and make it part of us. Brethren, let's do that. Let's remember these amazing stories. Let's remember this amazing script that's been written. Let's make it part of us. Let's take hope from it. Let's get excited about it. No matter how many times we read it, let's renew our excitement of the greatest action-adventure series ever written.